State lawmakers make changes to no cash bail laws that take effect soon. The same fault lines emerged.
There certainly will not be any sort of purge-like event.
This is about the men and women in this chamber who want answers on a very serious issue.
That is next on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm John Norton. Also on today's show, as many newsrooms shrink, a retired University of Illinois professor has a plan to save journalism.
We don't have to just sit back and watch Rome burn. The collapse of local journalism is not something we can accept or have to accept.
ISU bids to host the high school state football championships a quarter century after it gave up the games. Plus, a decades-long holiday tradition is back in Bloomington.
The appeal is simply the local talent.
Those stories in a Bloomington Normal News update are just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Greg Eckdale.
My life is much richer, and maybe that's a little emotive to say that, but I do realize there's a lot more to life with hearing aids.
Greg's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
From the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. On the final day of their veto session, Illinois lawmakers approved changes to the controversial Safety Criminal Justice Reform Bill. Among other things, it ends cash bail on January 1st. Despite the revisions, there was still plenty of opposition in the General Assembly. Coming up, Capitol reporter Mawa Iqbal reports on the debate, but first, colleague Alex Degman explains what's in the revised measure.
Lawmakers approved the changes nearly 2 years after the initial law was passed and weeks before its provisions take effect. While the cash bail system is still going away, supporters say the new bill offers some clarity. State Representative Justin Slaughter sponsored it in the House.
There certainly will not be any sort of purge-like event. In fact, quite the opposite.
Detractors call the Safety Act the Purge Law, likening it to the horror film The Purge because they claimed thousands of violent criminals would be automatically released on January 1st. Slaughter says lawmakers added language so that people being held on bond before January 1st will get a new pretrial hearing within 7 days if they're accused of low-level offenses. That increases to 2 to 3 months for people considered flight risks or dangers to the public. But the accused have to request that hearing.
If you're under the old system, you actually stay under the old system, but you have the option, right, to bring these cases back before the court.
The bill also says trespassers can be removed from private property. Slaughter says officers can arrest a trespasser if they're deemed a threat to themselves or others, or if they've been cited and don't comply. Burglary is no longer an immediately detainable offense because, as Sarah Stout of the Illinois Network for Pretrial Justice told lawmakers, it's a broad category.
For example, doing nonviolently breaking into a car in Illinois is a burglary, everything from that all the way up to the kinds of situations that you described. And that's why there's a parsing out of which burglaries are considered forcible felonies if there's an effort to detain them for safety reasons.
Police can detain someone for a burglary if the officer believes they're a threat or will flee a court hearing. The bill also now says prosecutors have to provide specific evidence about why a person is dangerous and should be detained, and judges can issue arrest warrants for people who don't show up to court. The measure got no Republican support. My colleague Mawa Iqbal explains why.
Republicans have argued against the Safety Act since it was passed last January. And House Minority Leader Jim Durkin said the changes brought forth still aren't enough. Durkin's frustration was palpable during the House floor debate yesterday evening as he tried asking for specifics.
You haven't answered my question. This is not about what the state's attorneys, four of them in the state of Illinois, think about. This is about the men and women in this chamber who want answers on a very serious issue that you're asking our and everybody else's support for.
Republican State Senator Jason Barrickman was also looking for specifics. He grilled the bill sponsors and witnesses about detainable offenses.
I'm trying to understand, again, breaking this down to what this means in communities that prosecutors want burglary included in these offenses, and it's not.
Barrickman said he believes concerns from state attorneys were largely ignored, which the Senate sponsor of the bill, Democrat Robert Peters, disputed.
That's what I think what makes this bill impressive, is the fact that even though there are differences of opinion, the state's attorneys came here and are neutral, the coalition is neutral, the sheriffs are neutral.
Republicans have complained they were left out of the bill drafting process. But Democratic Representative Jahan Gordon Booth disagreed. She said that sponsors of the bill brought many stakeholders to the table.
And see, that's the thing about this body. If you actually talk to people and work together in a collaborative manner, and I would even say in a bipartisan manner, you can get to a result.
Gordon Booth, who was a lead negotiator, shed a few tears and took group pictures as the House passed the measure. It is now headed to the governor for his signature. I'm Mawa Iqbal.
You can read more about how judges, prosecutors, defense attorneys, and others in the McLean County legal system are preparing for the end of cash bail. That is at WGLT.org. Sound Ideas, WGLT's news magazine, is on this Friday afternoon. Thanks for listening. Bloomington Normal trying to bring the IHSA state football title game back to Illinois State University's Hancock Stadium. Local tourism officials and ISU have submitted a bid to the IHSA to host the state football title games from 2023 through 2027. WGLT's Ryan Denham has the story.
The state football finals have alternated between Champaign's Memorial Stadium and DeKalb's Husky Stadium since 2013, but that's a practice that the IHSA is reportedly looking to end. ISU's Hancock Stadium would provide year-to-year consistency. ISU is not the only bidder, and the IHSA is expected to choose a winner this month, possibly next week. Crystal Howard is president and CEO of the Bloomington Normal Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. She says the IHSA has already done its site inspection at ISU.
We think that they liked what they saw, and we think that they liked the package that we put together. So we actually feel like we might have a good chance at this one because they want to stay in one place.
The inaugural IHSA football state title games were played at ISU's Hancock Stadium starting in 1974. They were played there every year until 1999, when a conflict with a home ISU football playoff game led the IHSA to move the contest to Champaign. U of I was awarded future hosting duties later that year. The IHSA finals are typically held the weekend after Thanksgiving, which could limit ISU's ability to host a home game in the first round of the FCS playoffs. ISU has been supportive anyway, pointing to its successfully hosting the girls' volleyball and basketball tournaments each year at CEFQ Arena. Howard says ISU football coach Brock Spack even helped with the recent IHSA tour.
And so things like that means a lot to somebody coming in and looking, at a bid, just like the president did with Bloomington Gold. She came over and talked to them. And so that helps us do our job.
The IHSA requires seating capacity of at least 12,000 for the football state finals. Hancock Stadium has around 14,000, although that's smaller than both Memorial Stadium and Husky Stadium. Howard says there would be hotel room for visitors that time of year around Thanksgiving, and they bring hundreds of thousands of dollars in economic impact.
But it's good for us because it is slow. The hotels get a little slower, although our hotels are doing very well. They do, that's usually a downtime, so it's a good time for us to have a big convention.
The IHSA says that Northern Illinois University and the University of Illinois have submitted bids to keep the state finals, though Memorial Stadium is looking to continue hosting on alternating years. Southern Illinois University at Carbondale has also submitted a bid. I'm Ryan Denham.
ISU may also have a hometown advantage. The IHSA is headquartered right here in Bloomington Normal. With stories and conversations around Bloomington Normal and McLean County, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. The number of journalists working in newsrooms across the United States is declining fast. Pew Research reported last year the average number of people working in news has fallen by 26% since 2008. That's a net job loss of around 30,000 people. University of Illinois retired communications professor and author Bob McChesney tells WGLT's Eric Stock how he believes a new funding model could stem the bleed of local journalism. He says the vital role the Fourth Estate plays in American democracy became clear to him early in his career.
Certainly by the time I got to grad school, I was always aware that this journalism in particular was an industry or a field that was a political function. That was the way to understand, not as a commercial function, not as just giving consumers news they can use, but it was a necessary institution for a functioning democracy or constitutional government with rule of law, that there had to be an information gathering distribution mechanism, what we call journalism, or else that's the oxygen for our entire political system. Without it, you can't have anything remotely close to informed self-government.
McChesney says the need for the local journalism initiative stems from necessity.
The United States is a situation where there are large portions of the United States where it's very difficult to have even a rudimentary idea of what's going on in your city or your county or even your state. Mm-hmm. News consumption is basically watching a cable channel or going to a website of the viewpoint you agree with and being covered two or three of the stories that everyone's talking about. The idea that commercial journalism is dead and no one ever thinks they'll ever make money doing it again. So we have to recognize that journalism is sort of like education or national defense or fire departments. They're public goods. There's something society needs, but the market can't generate in sufficient quality or quantity. And advertising's role in making journalism very profitable at the local level hid the public good nature of journalism for a century. But now that it's just gone away, we can see quite starkly that it is a public good. In the great glory days of the American press in the 19th century, it wasn't uncommon in a city like Chicago to have 15 or 20 newspapers, even smaller cities, but major cities like Indianapolis would have 8, 10, 12 daily newspapers. We don't necessarily have to have that many again, but the day of just having one newspaper, news medium in the community has got to be over. We need several competing news entities.
McChesney believes digital news is the future, but says government-supported journalism was what the founding fathers had in mind from the beginning.
The local journalism has always been done overwhelmingly by what are called newspapers, and now those are digital more than anything else. They're just local news media emphasizing journalism, and so newspaper is the shorthand for that. So if you look at American history, you find out that supporting independent journalism was job one for the founders of this country. It's hard to exaggerate how much emphasis they put on the need to have well-funded local newspapers for the whole system to survive. No one even thought in terms of like people just making money would be sufficient to generate the newspapers we needed. It was an obsession with Madison and Jefferson and Washington, all of them across the board. And they argued and they put into place that we needed to have a massive subsidy of local newspapers so they would exist in the first place. And what they did is they created the United States Post Office. And the main job of the U.S. Post Office into the end of the 19th century was to distribute newspapers. Basically, newspapers were delivered virtually for free.
McChesney says the need for postage subsidies declined in the 20th century, and people forgot about the government's role in supporting media. Now, he says, in the 21st century, the news isn't good.
We are down to a situation in the United States where our national news media probably has less diversity than the Soviet Union did when it just had Pravda and Izvestia and TASS. I mean, there's, you know, we're down to just a couple of people who cover the news. You turn on MSNBC or CNN, and basically they just bring in reporters from those news media to talk about their stories. That's their idea of journalism. It's such a dangerous thing because the diet of news we're getting is so much narrower, even if you get away from the quality of it. I mean, there's virtually no international coverage whatsoever now.
Right.
To give an example, Brazil, which is this incredibly important country at every level, especially in the global environmental work, but also in the campaign to maintain democracy and stop fascism, had a major presidential election a few weeks ago, and it got virtually no attention.
McChesney says he's working on drafting a formal proposal for his initiative, but is still looking for input from others.
Once we agree that you need public money, that there will be, that's how it's got to be supported, then the question is, how much do you need? How do you distribute it? Who controls it? What role does the government play? There's a whole bunch of questions that have to be answered.
McChesney says he's working on drafting a formal proposal for his initiative, but is still looking for input from others.
We don't have to just sit back and watch Rome burn. We don't have to. The collapse of local journalism is not something we can accept or have to accept. And there's historical and international evidence to show exactly how we can do it and do it successfully. And, you know, then making the point, which has always been clear, which is that if we don't do this, it's really hard to see how anything close to a functional democracy can remain in the United States.
That was retired University of Illinois communications professor and author Robert McChesney with Eric Stock from WGLT and reporting from correspondent Steve Tarter. McChesney says a national funding initiative will cost billions, but he says the system of ad-supported journalism has shown that it's no longer viable.
Well, it's December. That means we're talking about the holidays here on WGLT and Sound Ideas. And two longstanding Twin Cities traditions are just the thing to take your family's ho, ho, ho to the next level. In this double preview, arts correspondent Lauren Warnicke visits Community Players Theater and the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts to pull back the curtain on two holiday reviews providing fun for kids and kids at heart.
Look, Bloomington Normal knows how to do Christmas. For decades, local performers have come together to sing, act, and dance, volunteering their time and talent for the sole purpose of bringing cheer to all. Community Players' nod to the holidays extends back to the 1940s, but their popular review called Holiday on Robin Hood Lane kicked off in 1984 as a fundraising initiative. They kept that going until 1991, and noticing the gap, the Holiday Spectacular took up the mantle 21 years ago. Call it a supercharged year of cheer, but for the first time, audiences can see both of these merry delights back to back on this weekend and next. Director Lori Adams and playwright Nancy Steele Brokaw have been involved with the Holiday Spectacular for 20 years, joining the project in its second iteration and for everyone since then. They took time out from their dress rehearsal to talk about the spectacular's origin story and why they keep doing it. Adams, who teaches acting at Illinois State University, says she loves working with friends, colleagues, and neighbors to bring together something joyful for the whole community.
I mean, it was the brainchild of Marcia Bassolo and Henry Bird from the Pantagraph, and thought that the community could support and should do a holiday show with local talent. A brilliant idea. And so the first year, I believe, it was mostly music. And then the second year, I was brought on to direct, and Nancy was brought on to write a script. And so that's, we've been with it now for 20 years.
And Nancy, does the script change each year? Do you write it anew each time?
Yes. We have a footprint that we more or less follow. And a few elements are common year to year, and our audience, I think, really likes that. But the script totally changes year to year, and often based on who I'm writing for. And this year we have, you know, is the best talent pool I can remember. You know, we have seven terrific actors that I was thrilled to write for. And that's a big factor in how the script comes out, is who I'm writing for. And who we want to feature.
That's what I was going to ask. Which comes first? Do you know the casting when you write the script, or do you have to kind of go in not knowing who might do these parts?
Yeah, it's a little balancing act. It all is. And we don't know the songs. We know some of them. And the script is really designed to string a lot of production numbers together. So I always think of it as like the cord on a string of lights, and the bulbs are the, you know, performance numbers, and I have to find a way to string together things like, you know, a church scene and Rockettes and a kid's number, and this year even a duet, a Mozart duet from The Marriage of Figaro.
So when I moved here in 2019, one of the very first things I heard was like, oh my gosh, the Holiday Spectacular. Like, it was just this kind of local phenomenon. So what do you think, Lori, has been the ongoing appeal of the spectacular?
The appeal is simply the local talent.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, right?
I mean, there are many professionals working on this show. I mean, Nancy and myself and the scene designers. And I mean, you know, the light design, there's all kinds of people that are working on it. But the heart of the show is up there on the stage. And those are our townspeople and people that work at State Farm or any number of other places that around the community. And They bring their talents, and they are talented.
How do you keep your razzle-dazzle holiday spirit every year, Nancy?
I know so many people from Holiday Spectacular that I would never have met otherwise. And we do, as is often the case in theater, form a family every year. And some of our performers have been with us for 20 years. And then, you know, the big surprises every year are the new people who show up, and we have some amazing new people this year. So it's just a chance to be with other people from the community, giving a gift back to this community that we all love and are happy to live in.
Christmas. Meet your neighbors here. See your friends that you haven't seen. Get out of your old routine. Come and spread some cheer.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Lauren Warnicki. Across town at Community Players Theater, preparations are well underway for next weekend's holiday on Robin Hood Lane. Director Wendy Cotone says this is not her first time working with Community Players. Not by a long shot.
Yeah, so I started here when I was about 12 years old. So my first show was Music Man, and I knew the moment I stood on stage that I was never going back. I've been lucky enough to be on this stage. I think this is my 35th show that I've been a part of here, either as a performer or sometimes I'm a choreographer as well because I love to dance. And this one, I got the lucky opportunity to direct.
I'm assuming it's different than directing a scripted play or a musical. So what does your role actually entail?
Yeah, you don't start with a script for this one. So we had to start by having a vision of what we wanted this to be. And that was a collaboration between myself, our music director, our choreographer. What I really wanted to do was bring joy and happiness to people in the holiday season and celebrate the diversity that we have during the holiday season as well. So this is really about, you know, putting together songs, whether it's group numbers or duets or solos that, you know, bring some hope and some life and some love into the community.
It is, from what I understand, holiday-themed, not specifically Christmas, but what can folks who don't celebrate Christmas look forward to on this program?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's definitely Christmas songs, right? There's plenty of them. But I tried to, as much as I possibly could, provide a way where there are more holiday-oriented songs. We've got some fun Hanukkah songs in there, too. So doing our best to try to help represent everyone who's celebrating during the holiday season.
Was WGLT correspondent Lauren Warnicki with Lori Adams, Nancy Steele Brokaw, and Wendy Cotone. The Holiday Spectacular runs tomorrow and Sunday at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and you can catch Holiday on Robin Hood Lane next week. That's Thursday through Sunday at Community Players Theater in Bloomington.
Support for arts and culture programming on WGLT comes from PNC Financial Services. We're focusing on giving back as part of an ongoing commitment to the community PNC serves.
And that's Sound Ideas for today. WGLT's news magazine is brought to you in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm John Norton with Story Help today from correspondent Lauren Warnicki, also WGLT's Eric Stock, correspondent Steve Tarter, and WGLT's Ryan Denham. The show today was produced by Samantha Hill. Hope you have a great weekend. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.